many women have done excellently, but you surpass them all. Charm is deceitful, and beauty is vain, but a woman who fears the Lord is to be praised. Give her the fruit of her hand, and let her works praise her in the gates.
Thank you, Chuck, for that reading. Thank you for your presence here this morning. Look forward to our time together in the few moments we have remaining. I'd encourage you to open your Bibles to 1 Samuel chapter 1. 1 Samuel chapter 1, that's where my Bible's open to this morning, and we'll get to that text in just a moment. 1 Samuel chapter 1. And to the guys in the booth, I am doing everything with the remote. If you've not got that up there, then I can't control it. So if you can get that worked out. We are aware that today is Mother's Day, and I'm sure there are some visiting with us that you're here for that purpose. Maybe you're here with Mom, and you're sharing this time with her. What better way to share with your mother than spiritually today in this time of fellowship together? I was recently reading a book about a story in that book about a man tells about his first child's arrival and how they went to all the classes training them for the preparation of the birth. He said it was interesting how they never called the pain of childbirth pain. They said it was discomfort. Some of you moms might find that interesting. Said that you will feel sometimes some discomfort. And so on their second anniversary, his wife Nancy went into labor with their daughter Laura. And he says in the middle of that process, she let out a scream that was louder and weirder than he had ever heard. And not knowing what to say, he looked at her and he said, "Honey, are you feeling some discomfort?" You can imagine the look that she gave him. And finally, that young little child was born. It was arrived into the world. And he says in his words, as his wife held that brand new little cone head in her arms, she looked around the room, and with a look in her eyes, she said, "I would kill for this baby." And he was alarmed by that, and he said, "Dear, I think most moms in this situation would say something like, 'I will live,' or 'I would die for this child. I will die for her.'" His wife replied, "Die? Why would I want to die? If I died, then I couldn't be with her. I'll kill for her." And he took the child and he began to marvel at the creation. And he said, "I can't believe there is this live, flesh and blood, immortal being in this room who just a few moments ago didn't even exist, and she'll grow, and we get to watch her as her parents, and she'll become a woman, and she'll raise her own children, and then she'll become old, and this red hair will turn white, and the skin that is so pink and smooth will become wrinkled, and one day she'll be an old lady sitting in a rocking chair." To which his wife looked at him and said, "Yes, and I'd kill for that old lady too." I think that sums up a mother's love. Children are brought into this world, and the mother wants to be with that child. She looks forward to the days together and the moments they have together. She cherishes all those memories. You know, it's interesting, as a preacher, it's hard to know what to preach sometimes, but when it comes around days like this, it seems pretty easy. You're all thinking about Mom anyway, why not talk about her? And I want us to take an opportunity today to look at a woman who is remarkable, a remarkable mother, one who is worthy of imitation in 1 Samuel 1 and 2. You know her simply by the name of Hannah. Or maybe you know her only as Samuel's mom. As we read that story, we realize, as she's introduced, she is one of two wives to a man named Elkanah. The other one is Peninnah. And they as two wives, they are one of the wives, Peninnah, that has children, has many children. And yet Hannah does not have children. And much like the time of Jacob, she is aggravated by this. She is troubled by her inability to be a mother. In fact, the other wife kind of makes fun of her, much like Leah used to do to Rachel as well. And following this idea, she would provoke her. In 1 Samuel 1 and verse 6, it says, "Her rival used to provoke her grievously to irritate her because the Lord had closed her womb." It seems like the similarities don't end there to Jacob's household. Because it appears from the actions of Elkanah in verses 4 and 5 that he preferred one of these wives over the other. On the day when Elkanah sacrificed, he would give portions to Peninnah, his wife, and to her sons and daughters. But to Hannah he gave a double portion because he loved her, though the Lord had closed her womb. Verse 8, after she is weeping over her child and ability to have children, he says to her, "Why do you weep? Why do you not eat? Why is your heart sad? Am I not more to you than 10 sons? Maybe he's a little unattached to the reality of the times, and maybe we are too. A woman's value, especially in this ancient culture, was significantly attached to her ability to produce offspring and to produce an heir, to produce a child, to give her husband a son, and even a daughter, and yet she could not do that, and that may seem archaic to us, but it certainly was the culture and custom of the day. And so Hannah decides to do something about her problem. In verses 10 through 18, we can read how that she turns and pleads to God. In verse 11, it even says there that she makes a vow to God. I want you to notice that starting in verse 11. And she vowed a vow and said, "O Lord of hosts, if you will indeed look on the affliction of your servant and remember me and not forget your servant, but will give to your servant a son, then I will give him to the Lord all the days of his life, and no razor shall touch his head." Well, as she continues to pray, Eli the priest sees her from afar off, and her mouth is just moving, and she seems to be a drunken woman to him in verse 13. So Eli says in verse 14, "How long will you go on being drunk? Put your wine away from you." But Hannah answered, "No, my Lord, I am a woman troubled in spirit. I have drunk neither wine nor strong drink, but I have been pouring out my soul before the Lord. Do not regard your servant as a worthless woman, for all along I have been speaking out of my great anxiety and vexation." And Eli answered, "Go in peace, and the God of Israel may grant your petition you've made to him." And she said, "Let your servant find favor in your eyes." Then the woman went her way and ate, and her face was no longer sad. It's amazing to me, by the way, that she pours out her soul, and yet, as such a true follower of God, when she leaves without the countenance of one who is distressed and grieved and vexated, but rather she leaves as one who is no longer sad because she trusts in her God to give her a son. And that is exactly what happens. She conceives a child, and when the time is right, in verses 26 through 28, she keeps her promise. She delivers that child once he is weaned to the temple and leaves him there. I find it amazing the story we began with, that most mothers today would kill for their child so they would never be separated. And yet here is a mother who begged for a child, and what does she do? She gives her child up, separating herself from him, because that was the vow she took to God. Verse 28, she says, "Therefore I have lent him to the Lord. As long as he lives, he is lent to the Lord." I find that interesting. Chapter 2 and verses 18 through 19, we find out that every year Elkanah and his family went to offer sacrifices, and when Hannah would come, she would bring garments she had made for Samuel, and she would visit him, and every year she would come see him. But he stayed there in the temple with Eli, with the Lord, fulfilling the vow that she made when she cried out to God. I want to share with you this morning just three lessons from this simple story we've all read before about parenting and motherhood, and three admirable qualities that we can see in our life as we learn from her. And the first of those great stories or examples of her example is that you need to give your problems to God. It's interesting how that we attribute the problems of stress and anxiety and worry to women more than men. In fact, there have been studies by sociology departments at universities and other areas that have actually tried to show and prove that women do worry at a higher rate than men. But it also shows that women understand better the perceived risk than men do. In other words, we are so unattached to the anxiety, sometimes we don't calculate all the odds like we should. But women do. Maybe that's one of the great ways we balance each other out as companions, is they help us to see what could happen. I think there is little doubt from this story that Hannah has great anxiety about her problem of not having children. She is grieved and provoked in verse 6 by her husband's other wife. She would not eat as she wept in verse 7 because of this problem. Verse 10 describes her as deeply distressed. She cries out. I am sure there are times in her life where Hannah couldn't sleep because she couldn't have children. I like the way verse 10 is worded, by the way, in chapter 1. I want you to read that again, where it said she was deeply distressed and prayed to the Lord and wept bitterly. I see this mother grieving and yet praying through her tears. And I think there is a great lesson to be learned from that example. As she is distressed and her world seems to be one of failure and full of anxiety and cares and all of the burdens, the emotional baggage that she has, here is Hannah turning to God. Why? To give her problems to God. To cast her cares upon Him because she knows that He cares for her. You know, raising kids is a tough job. And some of you are looking at me and say, you ain't even got to the hard part yet. And I realize that. There's a lot of worry and anxiety and trouble that comes. You raise children. From the moment they're born, you worry about what's going to happen to them. Maybe they're playing in the front yard and you watch them anxiously through the window, afraid that they're going to get too close to the street where they could get run over. Or maybe the big day comes where you take your child, they've grown big enough, they can't be in the crib anymore, or maybe they climbed out of it, so you put them in a regular bed, and what a big day that is. But then the day comes where they fall off of that bed. And you run and you rush and you scoop them up and you know they've hit their head and you go to the ER because you know they are permanently damaged for life. There's a goose egg on their head and you are afraid that something may happen. Maybe they'll be forever changed. Maybe they'll grow up and be a Cubs fan and forever mentally handicapped. But the problem is, whether it's that or something else, there's anxiety. You knew I'd get at that. How do we get through all those difficult times? How do we face the challenges of anxiety and stress and worry? Because, I mean, I didn't even talk about teenagers and all the problems and baggage you guys create. Are you kidding me? We've already decided we're just chaining our kids from the age of 13 to 25 in the house. How do you handle that? You rely on God. And even when it's moments of tears, you pray through the tears. And there will be tears when you raise children. Philippians chapter 4. Paul said there, let your reasonableness be known to everyone in verse 5. Philippians 4 verse 5. Let your reasonableness be known to everyone. The Lord is at hand. Do not be anxious about anything. Do not worry about anything, but in everything, by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God, and the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, the peace of God that surpasses all understanding will guard your hearts and minds in Christ Jesus. You know, I think that passage applies to parenting too. That some days, there's not a lot of peace in raising kids. Some days there's a lot of turmoil and struggle and anxiety. But what we have to do is we have to pray and cast our anxieties to God and let Him take care of it and allow the peace of God to rule our lives to let us know it's going to be all right. Peter said it this way. He said in 1 Peter 5 and verses 6 and 7, humble yourselves, therefore, under the mighty hand of God, so that at the proper time He may exalt you, casting all your anxieties on Him, for He cares for you. Parents, let me share an undeniable truth with you this morning. Moms, let me make sure you understand this as you go to raise your children. God cares for you. And as you struggle through raising your kids, and you don't always know the right things to do, and you see trouble up ahead for them, the one truth you need to hold on to is God cares for you. He cares for you as His child, but He cares for you in every role of your life, as a wife, as a mother, as an employee, as a community member. He cares for you. And if you will cast your anxieties in all of those areas on Him, He will answer your prayer. Just just like Hannah's prayer was answered. She was given that child. And then she gave her child to God. We need to learn to give our children to God. I think sometimes we think we had kids just for ourselves, that we brought them into the world for us, for our good pleasure and our benefit. And there is some truth to that. I remind my oldest child, my son, quite often, I wanted a boy so I didn't have to mow the yard anymore. There is some pleasure you get from your children. But you know what? The reality is, these children that we have been given, placed in stewardship over, they are God's creation. And we need to give them to God. In 1 Samuel 1 and verse 11, she gives this child to God before he's ever born by putting him under a Nazarite vow according to the law of Moses. You'll give me this son, no razor will ever touch his head. Sign of the Nazarite vow. And she did that, and that vow was kept. I got to tell you, I want you to consider for a moment who this young boy becomes. Samuel, who as early as 1 Samuel 3 is a young man, possibly a teenager, is called by God in the middle of the night to do His will, to declare the message of God concerning the worthless sons of Eli. He is established in chapter 3 of 1 Samuel as a prophet of God. He serves as a judge over Israel in chapter 7. In fact, the last judge of Israel. He anoints the first two kings over Israel, of Saul in 1 Samuel 10 and David in chapter 16. Samuel plays one of the most important roles in the history of God's chosen people. And you know why God used him that way? Because his mother gave him to God and said, you use him for your good will and your good pleasure. Seems like today we are willing to give our children to a lot of things. I believe there's no doubt we give our children over to education. When we move to a new place, we choose the most academic schools we can, or schools with particular interests. Maybe we pay for private schools because of the great benefit will be to them. Maybe we choose to homeschool because we think that's the best route. But we are consumed with education. We get them tutoring if they need it. We make sure they excel so that one day they'll be able to choose a college to go to. And we often choose those colleges based on what the great academic future will give them and if they'll be able to excel in the field they have chosen. We give our kids to education. Sometimes we give them over to recreation and to sports. Sometimes we have a child that is athletically gifted, and so we enroll them in particular sports, and we push them beyond the average player to excel. We spend lots of money on individual teaching and coaching. Maybe we train them ourselves. Maybe we get them a personal trainer to help them to build up their strength to be better. And we spend weekend after weekend traveling and running from game to game and practice to practice. All of that in hopes that one day, if we're lucky, they'll be able to get a scholarship and go to one of these fine academic institutions. And maybe, just maybe, they'll even be able to live professionally playing that sport. We give them to sports and recreation. You know what's interesting about us giving those things to our children? Is that both of them really end in the same thing, and that is one day we choose a place far from home for them to go and to continue their life. We call that a university, and we drop them off in a dormitory, and we leave them for the continuation of their learning and their growth and their development, whatever area of emphasis we've given them to. I wonder sometimes what happens when we drop those children off. Maybe you've not thought of it this way, but Hannah dropped her son off at the University of the Divine. He spent years studying under the godly guidance and counsel of God, living in the temple, witnessing and participating in spiritual things. But I got to tell you, sometimes we give our children over to other things. Sometimes we drop them off at a university that's 2 hours away from the closest church. Or maybe there's not a church there that's going to help them spiritually grow. Or maybe in the process of pursuing education, we've never helped them get connected to the Lord's body. They don't have the great, strong, deep ties and relationships they need to build their faith when they leave home. The religious dropout rate of children leaving home and going to college who quit going to church is astounding. And there's great studies in the religious community as to why that's happened. I'll tell you why it's happened. Because we as parents have given our children over to everything but God. Give your children to God. Because I got to tell you, my child, his life won't be over if he doesn't make it to Harvard or the NFL. But his life means nothing if he doesn't make it to heaven. And that starts from the moment they are born. Give your children to God. Third and final thing, give your life to God. You see the pattern of faithfulness by Hannah. Her family, led by a godly man, no doubt, of Elkanah, is sacrificing yearly in 1 Samuel chapter 1 and verses 3 through 5. At the end of 1 Samuel 1 and verse 21, he is returning after the birth of Samuel to pay his vows and offer his yearly sacrifices. In 1 Samuel chapter 2 and verse 19, she sees Samuel annually. Why? Because they are going to the temple to offer their sacrifices. We don't really understand the law of Moses, perhaps, but I have to tell you that when you see this annual trip to Jerusalem by people in the Old Testament, what you see is someone who is keeping the commandments of God. And even her husband, Elkanah, shows great response. I don't know what my response would be if my wife walked in and said, "Honey, we're pregnant, but I got to tell you about a little deal we made with God before this. I tell you what happened here." Can you imagine being told that this child, your son, is going to be taken away and not be your child, essentially? Oh, I know that he's your child, but he's going to go a couple of hours away and he's going to live at the temple and they're going to raise him and that's how this is going to do. And yet in verse 23, her husband says, "Do what seems best to you. Wait until you've weaned him. Only may the Lord establish this word." Faithfulness. And Hannah's faith is seen. Rather than be like Job's wife in response to her grief, who said, "Why don't you curse God and die?" Hannah turned to God and trusted. She was given a child. Faithfulness. Faithfulness. She gave her life. May I remind you the description of the time that Samuel was born into? The book of Judges ends with this description in chapter 21 and verse 25. "In those days, there was no king in Israel. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes." Here is a time period where the morality and the religion is running amok, and yet, born into this time period is Samuel, the last great judge of God's people, to a couple who, despite the immorality of their neighbors, is doing what's right in God's eyes. We live in a time period much like Hannah's day. People are doing what is right in their own eyes. People are making up their own morality and making up their own gods and concocting their own religions. And it's very tempting to get caught up in that and use that as a defense for us to do whatever we want to do to justify the practices we want. We need to learn from Hannah, even in the midst of this time, give our life to God. You know, in our day, the young man had been abandoned at a church and left there for all of his life. He would grow up to go to prison because he joined a biker gang due to his abandonment issues, selling drugs and all of the things that would happen because his mom gave him up. And he'd get on TV and he'd blame her for it. And that's not what happened here. Samuel instead, I tell you what he does, he follows the lead of his mother. He gives his life to God. You read the book of Samuel, 1 and 2 Samuel, you see the things that he did for the Lord and the difficult situations he went to because he was God's prophet. He followed the example of his mother. And I tell you what, if we will give ourselves to God, our children will follow our lead in that as well. I think we need to think about that this morning as we think about moms and fathers and parenting. We give in our life God. There's a verse in chapter 1 I don't want you to skip over, though, that we read earlier, and I want you to think about it. In verse 16, as she is talking to God, she says to God, "Do not regard your servant as a worthless woman." I must say that Hannah was anything but worthless, wouldn't you agree? But instead, she was a woman worthy, a woman worthy of imitating. As we close, let me say to our moms today, thank you for all that you do. Thank you for the comfort and the care and the affection you give your children, for the way that you are raising them to be godly, for being here with them this morning, for being the one in your house who knows how to laugh when they need to laugh and knows how to cry when they need to cry. Only mom can listen to a child's problems the right way. Sometimes us dads, we're just not good at that. This morning, can I encourage you, my dear sisters, to enjoy your time, but also to follow the example of our good sister Hannah. Give your cares to God. Give your children to God. Give your life to God. I am sure it's possible there are some here this morning who've not given your life to God. We'd encourage you to do that. You have the opportunity now. As we're going to ask the question, who will follow Jesus in the song we're going to sing? Will you follow Jesus? Will you obey the gospel? Will you put on Christ today by believing in who He is? Repenting of your life, confessing your faith in Him, and being baptized, immersed, rising up a new creature, following after Him. We'd encourage you to do that now. Come while we stand. While we sing this song.